Today, we welcome Cameron Cristani to the Overseas Athlete Podcast. Cameron is a footballer from Stanthorpe in Queensland, who is now playing professionally in Norway. Cam discusses the challenges and the rewards of playing overseas in Norway and the structure of the football leagues over there in such a football-based and loving country. The importance of European football and just being around that environment and what he's found. Talks about his role as being a mentor now to younger players and trying to balance his work, life and football in a new country and coming across all the sort of challenges and unique experiences that he's faced. He also talks about the dedication and support from his parents, who, if anyone knows the distance between Stanthorpe and Brisbane, who used to drive him to training and games, you know, constantly over many, many years. And he talks about the support and the love that he's got from his family to be able to chase this dream. A really great story with Cameron, a really great guy, and I hope you enjoy. So good afternoon, Cameron. Thank you very much for joining me on the Overseas Athlete.
Good afternoon, Chris. It's been a while. We had a hiccup with me and work, but we're finally got it to happen. And I'm excited to have a chat, and I guess for you to delve into my career so far, and for me to hear your perspective on a few things as well.
Definitely. No, as you say, you're back in Australia for a short time, so it's easier to catch you on the time frame now, which is good. Yeah. But yeah. So how we'll generally start is I'll just get you to jump into, you know, a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and where you're, or how you've become an overseas athlete.
Yeah. I was born and raised in Stanthorpe, a country town in Queensland, and started playing football with my four brothers. And then progressively just made it through the ranks, and I got to Queensland trials when I was about 14 and made the Queensland Academy of Sport. And then from there, I didn't realise that the Raw Youth was a thing. Got invited to train with the Raw Youth, and I was there for 5.5 years. Got myself a couple of Asian Champions League games and a couple of A-League games while I was there. So that was definitely probably a highlight of my career to date. And then since then, I've gone back to the NPL in Queensland, won a grand final and premiership, played in the QPL too. And that was the kind of stage where I thought that football was kind of taking a little bit of a back burner for me, and I was starting to probably focus a little bit more on life after football. And then I was lucky enough to get a call from Casey Weirman. Played for the Socceroos, he's played for the Strikers and stuff. And he's a coach of the team that I play with in Norway, Strømmen. So he called me a week before their season, or 2 weeks before their season started, asked me if I'd be interested in an opportunity to play overseas. And that's always been a dream of mine to play in Europe. Straight away I was like, yeah, just give me the details and yeah, we'll go through it. So contract and everything had to be done in 2 days before the deadline, and then a week later I was over there, and yeah, I've been over there, it'll be almost two seasons now. So yeah, that's pretty much just a little snapshot, I guess, into my footballing life so far.
And when you say, one of the things I just sort of picked up on there was, like you said, football was sort of taking a back burner. You're not very old, are you? So what age were you then that where you sort of just thought that was maybe coming, not to an end, but you know what I mean? You're just sort of not focusing as much.
No, I was 25. And, you know, not to sound, I guess, full of myself, but I feel like I'd achieved everything I could achieve in the Queensland football landscape. Without getting a real sniff at getting back to an A-League club or anything like that. So for me, it was just, yeah, like my boss at the time, Terry Kirkham, he was coaching a team in the fourth division in Queensland and offered me a chance to play a different position and, to play in the midfield. And I took it and started, I guess, focusing a bit more on, my work, I guess, career. I just think that I just felt there was a big brick wall in the Australian football for me, and I couldn't see myself getting over that wall. So I thought, you got to focus on life after football at some stage. So I thought that was the right time, but obviously I got given a really big second chance, I guess.
Yeah, so without that sort of call coming in from Casey, was it just a matter of just going to start playing socially and sort of had you even thought about any opportunities overseas, like through Asia or Europe?
I guess I'd been asked previously to, when I just came out of the Raw, maybe to play in Iceland, but then they went for a centre back that's played 200 games in the La Liga, so I can't argue with that. A couple of opportunities, I guess, to play like Philippines, but I got told I would have to pay my own way there and then trial when I got there. And I kind of went, well, my football resume probably stacks up better than the people that are there. So I didn't want to, you know, it was kind of a kick in the guts that they wanted me to fly my own way there and then trial. So, yeah, that was kind of where I was at. But no, I was at Caboolture, which was in the QPL 2, and we got promoted the season I was there, and then the following season we were in the QPL 1, and we just started the season, and then, yeah, I got the call. So for me it was just I've always based myself around wanting to be at like a family environment kind of club, one where my family feels accepted and it's got a good feel about it. So I've always based myself around that kind of stuff. So I felt that at Caboolture. I felt I could enjoy my football again and stuff like that, and then just focus on other aspects, I guess, of my life. Mm.
Okay. And the call from Casey, did you know him previously? I know he was – did he used to be at Western Pride for a while?
Yeah, he was at Western Pride. He came in and he was doing some strength and conditioning stuff my early days in the Raw. And then he kind of touched base maybe 2015, 2016. so I knew of him and had spoken to him a few times. But, yeah, then he just messaged and asked if we could have a chat. And after half an hour with him, he sold the dream to me, and I couldn't be happier that I got that phone call and took it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mm. Just sort of out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah. You know, the club that we're at isn't, you know, financially massive. So they kind of wait to make their signings around the March kind of time, March and early April, just so, yeah, I guess they don't have to pay the players for January, February and stuff. So they kind of keep a thin squad and then try to really bring it together the last 3 or 4 weeks. So, yeah, I guess he was just on the hunt for a centre-back that he thought he could trust and the style of play that he had. So, yeah, he gave me the call. Yeah, it was literally out of nowhere. It was at, I guess, obviously 10 o'clock at night. So it was, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Norway. So, yeah, he must have been racking his brain for a bit. But, yeah, I'm grateful that I got that opportunity.
It's a real random thing to happen, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it was a Friday night and, yeah, I was just, you know, just asleep. And I think we had floods in Brisbane, so I didn't have any games or something on that next day. And, yeah, I was going back to my hometown and discuss it with my parents because they've been massive for me. We were driving 5-hour round trips 5 days a week for 3.5-4 years while I was still at school with the QAS and Brisbane Roar. So they're always pivotal in my footballing decisions. They've always been the supportive type. They've never been, you know, those parents that can be really pushy and stuff like that. No, they're really good for me, for my headspace and everything. So, yeah, I came back and discussed it with them and discussed it with my friends and discussed it with Terry because he was my coach and boss at that stage as well. And everyone said, you've just got to do it. And the thing was that everything was set up like everything was set up perfectly. Like my flights were paid for. I had accommodation. I knew I was getting a wage no matter whether I was going to be injured or not. So it was not like I was going to a country where it was going to be very, very difficult for me to find my way, I guess. And I'm lucky that they speak English as their second language. So I've picked up on some Norwegian, but, you know, there's some opportunities that come up and you just shake your head at and you go, you know, this isn't going to be good for me, my football, or, you know, my headspace and stuff, because you just won't feel comfortable. But, yeah, the way that it was all put to me was an opportunity I couldn't resist, really.
Yeah, no, definitely it sounds like it. And with Casey's call then, what was his sort of – not selling the dream to you, but obviously you want to be a professional footballer, yep, 100%, yep. Definitely. But what was the sort of conversations that he had and, like, the as you say, and actually from the conversations we've had with people so far – the turnaround time from getting a call to being in a new country is surprisingly between like 2 and 5 days. Like it's a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
How did you run through all of that?
I think it was more so he said to me, and he went, you know, it's your decision. And either way for him, it wasn't like there was no pressure on me. So it was go have a think. And I said I was on the way to my parents and stuff. And he goes, yep. And he understood that family person and stuff, and he's the same kind of person. So he went, look, I need to know by Monday. And we had the conversation, Friday, Saturday. So he just said, you know, go have a think about it. Though I need to know by Monday so we can get the papers sorted. And it was pretty much that he kind of talked it in a way that to realize my dream that I wanted to play overseas and to be back in that professional environment. And when you're in that environment, anything can happen from there. Mm-hmm. And Europe is such a, you know, a connected place with football, and you can have a good half a season, a good season, a good two seasons, and then something can happen just like that. So that was kind of, you know, the way that he sold it. And we talked about the block in Australian football in the landscape where players and coaches and people aren't getting, you know, the opportunities. So you have to source some other areas. And he said he looks after everything and he'll look after me. So that was all I needed to hear. And, yeah, then it was just sign the contracts. And then he just said, as quick as you can get over. And I said, just give me a couple of days. I just need to clear out my room and stuff and organize a few things. And, yeah, we had that conversation on the Wednesday after everything was signed. And by the Saturday, I was on a plane over to Norway. So it happens very quick. And I think that that's the best way for things to happen, because then you're just straight in and you're amongst it kind of thing. So I like that it happened so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. It's definitely having that theme to it, especially in football. And so you didn't have an agent, obviously, at that point. He looked after everything for you. And the contract in that, when it came across, did it all just look fairly standard? You were quite happy with how it also was sort of laid out?
Yeah, I had a look at it, and, it was all the basic stuff, you know. It had stuff in there, you know, where the players have obligations with the club to do some volunteer work and football school work. But I think that's, you know, that's the way that they do it over there. And the payments and everything like that. If you're injured and medical stuff and everything you need, it was all quite well stated in there that you'll get looked after and you won't be hung out to dry, really. So it was a good solid contract to just, you could read through and you could understand pretty straightforward what it was.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Mm. And it was like a full-time professional deal?
Yeah, full-time professional. Yeah. It said on there 37 and a half hours a week or whatever, and that's what their working week is over there and everything. So, yeah, full-time, so, which was good.
Yeah. And so what did you have to, in that short period of time then, you've signed it all, you said, yeah, here we go, it's Wednesday, you're leaving by Saturday. What did you have to sort of, other than pack up your room, say bye to mom and dad, et cetera?
Yeah.
Is there anything you had to do over here or get yourself set up? I know you mentioned in your email about getting a personal number over there.
Yeah.
If you dive into that in a sec. But, yeah, what were the sort of just little bits and pieces you might have had to think about?
Yeah, I think it was more just like, you know, I've got a car loan over here. And just, you know, I guess it's the annoying stuff with your license and your voting and all that sort of stuff. Just all that background kind of stuff that you just got to be aware of. And then bringing, like, because I'm with Commonwealth Bank. So to access my money, go in there and get travel money cards, so then you're not charged like a fee for transaction fees and stuff like that. So then you can just load your cards through your app and stuff like that. And then it was just more with my phone, just pausing my plan on my phone. Yeah, just the nitpicky stuff with, my bank and then the few other things behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little fiddly things, I know. But like that, things that can build up. If you've got five or six things to do in a short period of time, it is annoying.
Yeah, and I'm lucky as well, you know. Mum's always keeping tabs on stuff and checking, double checking, you've done this and done that. So, I'm lucky, you know. She's always been involved and knows what I need to do and double checks on everything. So, yeah, very, very lucky to have her.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And what was your first impressions then when you landed in Norway? How did that go?
Yeah, I landed there about 1:30 in the afternoon. Casey came and picked us up. And I had to wait about an hour and a half for my bag, so that was a bit annoying. But, we got there and it was still a bit of, like, snow on the ground and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, no, this could be a bit of a tough time with the snow and stuff everywhere. But obviously they were just coming out of winter. And then, Casey pretty much just drove me to the stadium, showed me around, and as soon as I got there, I was like, yep, cool, I can see myself playing here. I wasn't aware that majority of the pitches are artificial pitches in Norway, and that's a big talking point for their national teams and the top divisions and everything. But I've adapted to that. And then it was, then he just took me into Oslo, and just, I think having him there and having him as the coach made me be able to settle in a lot easier than it could have been without, you know, him. So I've never had an agent or anything like that. So, you know, having someone that I can trust and I know from Australia and everything like that made my life a lot easier. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely will. Again, from a few of the conversations we've had, when they've got that local person on the ground, and sometimes it might be another foreigner, or in this case, it's even better because he's a Brisbane boy and he can speak English and he's been there for a while. It does make a huge difference. And obviously, with English being the language as well, or, you know, the second language that they can all talk.
Yeah, it definitely makes it a lot easier, that's for sure.
And what about when you got to training? So how was your first day when you sort of rock up, meet your teammates and get into training? Yeah.
No, it was good. I had there was another Aussie there, Aiden Harvey, but he's been in Sweden and stuff for quite a while. So he was very open and accepting and made me feel very comfortable. And all the guys they're all a good bunch of guys. And, you know, you meet them and you feel a bit nervous and stuff. But once you get out into the field, like, it started snowing. So, you know, you got the long pants on, jacket, like long sleeve, everything. So, you know, that's a shock straight to the system, considering that I landed the day before as well. So had a nice light session, then got to meet everyone, and they're a very close-knit club. So, they made it very warm and welcoming for me, and all the guys that I've dealt with through there the last season and this season, they've all been fantastic. So, yeah, no, they're all a good bunch of guys.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it? That allows you, I guess, to focus on your football and not have too many things to be concerned about off the field.
Yeah, 100%. If you're feeling pretty comfortable on the field, then everything else will take care of itself, really.
Mm. And the so it's in Division 2 in Norway.
Yeah.
What's the standard like? Because over there you've got their Premier League, you've got Division 1, 2, 3, I think it goes 3, 4 and 5 as well. Yeah. There's a lot of football there.
Yeah, they've got like the Elite Serien, which is where like Nick D'Agostino and a few Australian boys have gone to. Yeah. And then they've got the Ubos League, which is like, the tier under that. And then they've got, second division, which is like the third tier, but it's split into two groups. And then under that, then you've got the third division, which is the fourth tier, and then there's six groups in that. So there's a lot of football over there. A lot of promotion, relegation going on, and a lot of opportunities. The football over there is massive, and with the TV and the broadcasting of it, they make it really accessible for you to be able to watch a lot of the games.
Yeah, so you've just got like that, Europe and the UK, you've just got football everywhere. It's on the news, it's on TV, it's in the papers, it's just everywhere.
Yeah, they've got like a website, Director Sport, and you can pretty much watch from the Ubus League down to the third tier, and they've got all the games on there kind of live. So that's how my parents watch the game. And then the Elite Serien, and then like they got the Elite Serien, the Ubus, they're both on like two TV channels that they have over there. So then they play like a couple of games on the Saturday for the Elite Serien, and then most of them on the Sunday, and then Ubus is like on a Monday. So they split it up quite well.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Yeah. And there's a lot of teams, isn't it? Like between all those divisions, there must be 40, 50 professional teams there in a small country.
They say like I think our division is like the last level of professional, and then it goes down to the third division. It's like semi-professional. So, there's a lot of teams, and, there's a fair bit of money pumped into a few because they've been relegated and they want to get back up. So, but it's not always easy. Like there's two automatic spots from like – there's one in each of our groups. So first spot gets promoted, and then second – from each of our groups have like a home and away playoff, and then they play against third last from the Ubus League, and then whoever wins that game, so either third last from there can stay, or whoever wins the second playoff from our groups can go into the Ubus League. So I guess it gives like third last a second chance to stay up with those two top leagues. So, yeah.
Good playoff structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's more games.
Yeah, it's good. I think it extends, like, if you're in the end of, if you're in that stuff, then you've got like another, if you go all the way, it's like another 3-4 weeks of football. So, yeah.
But how did you find the standard when you got there in, say, you know, Division 2 Norway compared to, say, the NPL here that what you'd been used to?
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit better in the technical aspect and a lot, I guess, a bit more football knowledge. You know, the NPL and stuff can sometimes be a bit of a physical kind of competition over here. But don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good footballing teams and stuff like that here, but I think maybe the artificial probably helps to play some more attractive football over there, especially when they wet it and then the ball just kind of glides over it and stuff. But they have a few different tactics that took a little bit to get used to, but no, I think it's probably just a bit better than the NPL in Queensland, I'd have to say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the training, like the training facilities, et cetera, everything on artificial as well, so you train on and play on it most of the time?
Yeah, yeah, it's a. We pretty much just play, train and play on our main field, so we don't go anywhere else. Other than in winter, if it snows too much, then we might hire like the Lillestrøm indoor hall or something like that for an hour and a half and go and use that. So there's a lot of indoor artificial halls, and especially more up north because there's obviously the more snow and stuff up there. So they've kind of got it covered a bit in that regard. And the teams that have grass fields, they, I think, they have maybe one or two spare grass fields, but if it's too wet or snowy, then they just go indoors and train on artificial on the indoors.
And how did you find that? Just like your, I suppose, the load on your body when you first got there initially. Did you find yourself picking up little niggles or how did you go with that?
It was more because I was just wearing like the firm ground boots on it. So I was kind of waking up the next day just like with a little bit of pain in like the arch or behind the knees or in the hips or something like that. But it wasn't anything that would keep me out. Then this year, I bought some artificial boots. So that's obviously been a lot better on the body. But, you know, you still have your days where, yeah, you train 3 days in a row or something. By the time you've trained the third day, then, yeah, you can definitely feel a lot more than on grass that you've trained, I guess. But it's more, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but it's more joint pain and aches, stuff like that.
Yeah, just on the hard artificial all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, excellent. And the training itself, what does a training schedule look like? Are you sort of like 5 days a week in the mornings, bit of gym work, tactical work, a bit of everything?
We train because there's a lot of boys that go to, they study or they're at school because we have quite a young team. Or there's people that work like I do. So we train at 3:30 in the afternoon. And then there's sessions offered in the morning for anyone that wants to go to the gym, or we have like a gym on site. So we train, yeah, 4 times a week, and it's a good week of training. Sometimes 5 days a week, but generally 4.
And how did you again from the very first time you went there? Did you adapt to it quite well? Just moving from say that sort of 2-3 nights a week over here to sort of a bit more load.
It probably took me 6 weeks or so, I would say, just because I was 2 nights a week in Australia. But I think that it helped that I was playing in the midfield, so I had a bit more of an engine than I would have if I was playing centre-back still over here. So it probably took me 6 weeks until like I felt like my body was at a good stage, I would say, I reckon.
Yeah, I know it's... Again, from a few of the conversations we've had, it's like trying to do extras, you know, before you get anywhere. But with that quick turnaround, it's impossible to do, isn't it? So you just sort of have to get there and get through it and just know that it will take a little bit of time to go from, say, 2 nights a week to 4 days a week and adding in a few gym sessions, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm lucky. I kind of am pretty in tune with my body, and I guess I know what it kind of needs. And if I need to do a little bit more extra running after a session, if my body feels all right, then I'll do that. And if my body's not feeling right, then I'll just, you know, kind of leave it and just come back the next day and train and, you know, just roll out and do all the stretching and stuff that might just free me up that little bit more.
Yeah. And I was just going to say on the training side of it and I guess the performance side. So again, going back to when you first sort of got there and you're obviously the new guy, the foreigner, how did you deal? Did you feel like there's a lot of expectation on you to perform and like that, just trying to get used to the artificial pitches, getting over there in short notice and then being a foreigner in there? How did you deal with all that and how did you go, you know, sort of pushing through it?
Yeah, I guess like I hadn't played center back probably in 2 years, so that was like a little bit of a added issue that I probably had. So it took me a little bit extra to adapt. But Casey was pretty clear in what he wanted from me, and he didn't want anything spectacular. And most of the boys, like they'd been briefed on pretty much what to expect from me. So I guess like, you know, the training, the four times a week, getting used to everyone, that was obviously a big benefit. And, you know, we did a couple of team building things and stuff like that. So I guess there wasn't like a massive amount of pressure on me to perform. It was just to get comfortable, and then my performances will kind of take care of themselves after that.
Yeah, well, that's good. Again, something that can just allow you to focus on settling in and playing football.
Yeah, yeah.
No, excellent. And with the like the Norwegian football itself, how do you find, do you have a lot of travel in between games? Like, are the stadiums, have you got many of them close, like around Oslo, or are you sort of from one end to the other sometimes?
We've got like a group at the moment where we've got like three quite northern teams. So we've had probably 4 or 5 plane trips, the longest being like 2 hours kind of thing. So, yeah, I guess there's not in our division and in our group, there's not a lot of like close teams. Probably the closest is maybe like 30 minutes away. But yeah, a lot of just traveling by bus, and then probably for half of it, and then the other half just plane trips. So I think the last game I played before I came back over here was a 50-minute plane ride, so, and then a 20-minute bus trip. So yeah, there's a bit of travel, but it's not like not a kind of shit travel. But you fly there, you can generally fly there and then fly back on the same day.
Okay. So most things like that within an hour, it's not too far.
Yeah, and there's a fair bit of flights around to most of the places as well.
Well, that's good. Make it easy. And yeah, the football itself around the different stadiums that you go to, what are the sort of sizes of crowds you play in front of, and like how much do they love it?
In our division, we're probably playing 200-300 people, I reckon, on average. And, you know, we've got a supporter group, and they really just kind of, I guess, live and breathe football in a way. They enjoy it. They're chanting. They've got their flags. They've got their drums. You know, you've got a couple of derby matches that the clubs used to have, a derby back in the day when they were in the bigger leagues. So there's still a bit of like rivalry and passion there. Obviously, when you go to the Bundesliga and the Eliteserien, that's when you start getting the Eliteserien. You start getting 10,000 to 15,000 people, and you know they've got the flares and the drums and the songs and everything like that. So, and they're obviously fighting for European football as well, because there's a couple of clubs that have been in the Champions League qualifying matches and stuff like that, and they've played in the Europa League and Europa Conference League. So, they really care a lot about it. But one thing I've found out, that they don't sell alcohol at the stadiums there. So that's like a big, I think it's a big positive for the game, I think, because then generally there's not, you know, I guess hooligans or one or two people that can ruin it for everybody. You know, they'll go to the pub before the game and have a couple of beers, go there, support the team, and then they'll go to the pub after the game. So I think that that's a nice cultural change. That, you know, they're selling their hot dogs, and they sell popcorn and stuff like that. You know, just I guess some good snacky food to have at the stadiums. But no alcohol, which I think's a big positive for the game over there, especially at the top league.
Yeah, okay. And that sounds like what you said before about the players, Champions League, Europa League. So at least there's a really good clear pyramid and pathway, I guess. If you're a team, like you said, there might be ones that put in a lot of money because they want promotion, and then they have that carrot of European football.
Yeah.
And do you find that, have you got a few clubs in your division where you can just, did you, I guess you couldn't do too much research before you got there, but since you've been there, can you sort of just identify then who the big clubs are and the ones that are trying to achieve things?
We played against them last year, and there's like Arendal, and then there's Lynn. Like, these guys are in the other group this year. They've all been at the big kind of level. And Strømmen had been in the – they'd been one of the clubs that had been in the Ubers League for quite a long period of time. So there's some – there's a couple of those teams that had been in the Elite Serien previously that have dropped down a couple of levels that just – yeah, they really, obviously the investors want to get back to that level and want to see their club back at that level. So I think it's good. I think it's good anytime people want to invest money into the game, because obviously that means people care. There's pressure that comes with that. But if there's people investing money into the game, then I think that if they do it the right way, then that can only be a good thing for football.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And you can see the ones where the money comes in and the money goes out, how quickly they can prop up and then fall back down again. So it's good to be sustainable, I guess, in a way as well.
Yeah, and it's good to know that they've got over there like an economics financial fair play thing. So if you're heading into the orange or the red zone, then, you know, NFF, like the Football Federation, they're right on to the clubs and dock points and they're right on to people about their financial positions. So they obviously want clubs to survive, but last year there was a club in our league that, you know, had a debt and they hadn't paid it off, and so they just got booted from the competition. So we had one less team in our group. But it's good to know that the governing body is, you know, grading each club and having a green light, an orange light or a red light on them, and the clubs know about that. So, yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah, that is good, because it can easily be financially mismanaged at any clubs at any level, but so it's just good to have a governing body actually keeping track of it.
Yeah, 100% it is. I think, yeah, it can only be a good thing having that.
And have you found then through obviously quite a good federation there that everything's well organised and everything's well run?
Yeah, yeah, they've got like, you know, you come in for your match day and every time there's the list of when timings are and when you need to be out for the warm-up, when you need to be back in, when you need to be out for kickoff and stuff like that. So it seems quite well run. And, well, from my position, it seems like the clubs are getting the information that they need to run like a nice, smooth game day and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. And what's the plans at the moment? So you're back in Australia just for a holiday for a little while?
Yeah, I have my best mate's wedding on the weekend, so I'm back for 3 weeks. And, I've missed out on a fair bit of stuff in football, but you know that there's some things I think that are important. Don't get me wrong, football's massive and I still work my ass off every day and I want to get to the next level and everything like that. But sometimes football just has to take like a back seat for a second and there's things that have been around a lot longer. So, it was a good opportunity. I've been away for 9 months and it was a good opportunity to attend the wedding of like a best mate of mine and be able to see mum and dad again and just spend some time to recharge and re-go. When I go back over, we've got another month of games still. So I only miss out on 2 games. But yeah, I just think it was, for me, I've given up a lot in football, with football. So I think that, yeah, for me, this is something that I wanted to do. And yeah, I think it'll put me in good space for the rest of the season and for next year and going forward.
And is that then, was that a conversation you had to bring up with the coach initially then, that you wanted to just take a bit of a break and do this? Yeah,
I spoke with Casey probably March or something like that when the invite came out and everything like that, and you know, he was good about it and he understands, just like all the players, like I addressed the players and I told them about it as well, so everyone was understanding about it all. You know, there was no, for me, it was just that I have an opportunity to see one of my best mates get married and to see my family and stuff again. So, you know, we started pre-season on January the 7th. So it's been a long season already. So I think it was just a good chance, for me to attend this. And Casey and the club have been, really good about it all. So, it's a, something I wanted to do, and I'm grateful they've let me do it.
Yeah, that's good. Just a chance to maybe just recharge yourself as well and go back ready to go.
Yeah, and it might just, you know, the few niggly things that I've had going on in my body and stuff that maybe gives them a chance to sort themselves out as well.
Oh, excellent. So you're still under contract for the end of this season and next year, or how long are you under contract over there?
My contract's up at the end of the season, but, you know, there's a lot of football teams around. European football is quite good. You know, they've got the Y Scout and everything like that, so it's not hard for a coach or someone to look you up and to have that conversation, and it's quite easy to arrange a trial early next year. So, but at the moment, I'd be happy to stay at the club that I'm at and renegotiate and everything like that. But, you know, if that doesn't end up in that way, then I can, yeah, I'll be able to find another club and play my football there. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think now that, like, once you're in it, once you've sort of had that one taste of it, but also for other clubs to see that you've done it for, you know, 1 year, 2 years over there.
Yeah.
Then you can just sort of stay within that circle, can't you? Because you can just send out your highlights. You might contact an agent, contact clubs, and at least then they've got stuff to watch and they know you've done it before.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I guess I got the stats and the highlight package from last year. I'll obviously have one from this year as well. So I can, like you said, to be able to do it for two seasons is obviously, it shows that it's not no fluke, and it's just shows that you've got that consistency and stuff, and you can show them more of your skills that have happened over the 2 years, where the 1 year might have just been a lucky year. But for me, yeah, the 2 years I've been there, I think I've played some really good consistent football, and I think that will help with any negotiations or talks with clubs or anything like that.
And on that then, so obviously, as you said, the idea is to stay where you are. You're happy there, which would be great. You know, are you going to approach them about this, or will they approach you in regards to signing a new deal?
Casey usually does it. He did it last year as well at the end of the season after the season's finished. So it'll just be, I think that they just like to wait until the end of the season, and then you have the discussion about whether you want to be here next year or whether he wants you to move on or whether he can help you and stuff. And I think he's well connected there as well. So if you have any issues finding a club, I think he's a good person to be able to head you into the right direction.
And you found outside of him, it's been a good networking, like a good football networking being over there in Europe?
Yeah, 100%. I've met some assistant coaches, some players, and especially younger players that you can see that they have the potential. And I think it's been good with the experience I've had to, you know, kind of show them that, you know, that if you have a bad game, then there's no point sitting in your room crying about it for a day or 3 days, because then you just beat yourself up for no reason. So I've been good at helping them. You know, I lived with a guy last year, a teammate, and, you know, he'd be very critical on himself. And I was like, nah, come on, mate, let's just go and we'll play some billiards, or we'll go play some pool or play some golf. So I think that's been good, because I've been able to probably nurture some younger boys with the experience that I've had from football. I think I've got a good football connection. That's for sure. Definitely with players and some coaches.
Yeah, that's good. And it's an important point you brought up there, because – it's good that you're a bit older and like that, you've got a bit of experience, because if you're in a foreign country and like that, you have a few bad performances yourself,
yeah,
it can really affect you. You might not want to leave the house. You might just be like, and because you're there alone, it's just constantly on your mind and like, I didn't play well today, or I didn't train well today. But like that, you've always got tomorrow, because you're training all the time. You can just, it's a bad day, you write it off and you go again.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a good mentality to have. Obviously, if there's a recurring issue, then you have to sort that out. But if it just seems like an issue that pops up every now and then, and you just have a bad day, one of the days where you can't shoot to save your life, like everybody has those days, that's a thing that you just discard. You go home, you make yourself dinner, you wake up the next day and you start fresh again. So I think that's a good mentality that you need to have. And like you said, it can be very difficult being overseas. I'm lucky that I have a good network of friends and stuff over there that, you know, if I'm slightly down or whatever, you know, they understand, and you're able to have that discussion. And then once you're done with that discussion, then, you know, life moves forward, and it has to move forward. Otherwise, you're just going to be caught in that moment for way too long.
Yeah, no, it's very important because like that, it can be such a mental game sometimes as well. Like everyone's obviously training 4 nights a week or 4 days a week, so they're all fit. You know, everyone's fast and strong. So if you're down mentally and not switched on for it, that's where you'll sort of let yourself, I guess, drop off a little bit.
Yeah, I've seen it happen with players, and if they haven't been selected for a couple of weeks or something like that, it can really play on their mind, and it's like everything's falling around them. So, you know, you've got to be mentally strong to be in sport. That's it, first and foremost, and you have to have a good network. Otherwise, you can lead yourself to like some really, I guess, crappy places mentally. And then once that happens, it can just spiral so fast. And then you fall out of love with the game, and then all of a sudden, yeah, here you are, and you go, what the hell happened?
Yeah, no. And have you, since you've been there for a while now, 2 seasons, have you found yourself in and out of the squad, or are you mainly starting week to week?
Last year I started all the games. And then this year I've kind of been in and out. Which has been, we've obviously had discussions. I've had discussions with Casey, and it is difficult to understand sometimes. But the same thing for me when I've played and I've been dropped, it's not been from my performance. It's just preference that he prefers. He believes that the other two centre backs are more athletic. So for me, as long as I play well and I feel happy with my performances, then that's all I can do. And I turn up to training every day and try to improve myself, because it's like I've told a lot of players, your future may finish at this club in 6 months. And if you just waste that next 6 months, then you've ruined your future at another club. So if it's not here, it might be somewhere else. Like there's thousands and hundreds of thousands of clubs around the world and so many places you can play your football. So if you're not turning up with the mentality that you've got to work and you've got to improve, then you're ruining your chance at maybe you get a call tomorrow and someone goes, oh, I want to loan you to the club. But because you've been screwing around for the last 4 weeks, you go there and they go, well, what a waste of time it was loaning you at the club. So as long as you're always trying to be better and putting your front foot forward and you're giving it a good crack, then you can be content with yourself and then you have no regrets. So I think that's really big, that if you're out of the squad, your mentality's got to be, yeah, I want to get back in the squad, but it's also got to be, maybe my future's not here, but it might be somewhere else. So I've got to be the best version I can be for when that opportunity comes. So yeah, that's what I kind of work on when I've been out of the squad.
Yeah, it's very true. Cause even though, and I say this a lot now, I sort of just keep coining this phrase, but even though it's a team game, making it to this level and these higher levels is an individual pursuit, because it's only you that can do it, you know. And as you say, if you're out of the squad, it doesn't mean that someone else isn't watching, because as you know, with the highlights you've got, the stats, someone might have earmarked you 6 months ago and you've got no idea.
Yeah.
And like that, if you just drop off and like, oh, well, this is shit, I'm not doing that anymore. But at least if you just keep driving, and, you know, different coaches have different opinions. As you say, you might play well, but the coach wants to go with 2 different guys this week for his reason, and he has to pick that. So, you have to make sure you keep your levels high for the other 10 people that might be potentially watching you. You just never know.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to bite your tongue and just respect the decision that's been made, and then just be the best version of yourself football-wise and around the change rooms. Because obviously, like, sometimes I've been told just before a training session, I've decided that, you know, you've had a great couple of games, but I've decided that I'm going with someone else. And then you have to walk into the change room after that. And if you're sour when you walk in, then you just ruin the atmosphere and stuff in there. So you have to be aware of how infectious what you do is in the change rooms. And you don't want to be a cancer in the team, because the moment that you're a cancer in the team, the coach can see that. Mm-hmm. And then you just put a mark against your name and then you're done. So, you just have to continue to improve. It's a mentality that I think I've got from growing up in a country town, living on a farm and everything like that. It's just I haven't been selected, but okay, I go again, and you go again, and you go again. And if you keep going again, then you can sit back when you're 40, 45, whatever, and you can go, I gave that opportunity a red hot crack. Mm. So that's something I want to be able to do when I'm finished football.
Yeah. And do you now see yourself staying overseas, whether it's here in Norway or somewhere else? Do you see yourself now, like, for the next 3, 4, 5 years? Is that the ideal plan?
Yeah, I think so. I just, being in Europe for football is something that I dreamed as a kid. And now that I've got the opportunity, and if I keep getting opportunities to stay there and play my football, that's 100% where I want to be. I know that there's not a lot of people that get that opportunity, especially from where I'm from. So I just want to keep grabbing it with two hands and just make the most out of it and just have some longevity in it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, as you say, and it might not be Norway, it might be Sweden, Denmark, it could be anywhere.
Yeah, I think it's... And that's the beauty of football, and now with technology and social media and videos and all that sort of stuff, is that now it's more accessible than ever to get your name to where you want it to be, or to even try to have a crack at going somewhere or something like that.
Yeah, it is. There's so many opportunities out there, and this is what this is about, is highlighting like that. It could be kids here going who's never even thought about playing in Norway, and all of a sudden they might listen to this and go, actually, yeah, I think I could play in Norway.
Yeah,
start researching it.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest thing, is I didn't really think of Norway as a country to play football. Mm. And then I got the opportunity to play there. And now I've travelled around it. I've seen the Northern Lights. I've made some really good connections with people there. Like, I really do love my life there. Mm. You know, with football and without football, regardless of whether I'm playing or not, you know, I'm very, very happy with where I am.
That's excellent. And I know it's a very, I've never been, but everything you read and see, it's like a beautiful country, you know, nice scenery, lots of places to travel and visit. So you'd probably have a good, I suppose, training 4 nights a week, and you say your work as well, which you can touch on, but you'd have probably a good work-life balance to maybe do a bit of travel or see a bit of the country as well.
Yeah. I work pretty much full-time, kind of as like a caretaker, maintenance kind of person, and that's from 7 till 2:30. I finish that and then I go to training and I'm done everything by 5 o'clock. So having the extra income allows me to, when we get 3 days off for the 2-week summer break, it lets me go and travel and see either in Norway or, you know, I went to Italy for a week in the summer and stuff like that. So it's good to have that balance, because like we spoke about before, with having, if you have a crap day, you know, I can just go to work and I talk to the guys at work and we talk about football, talk about life. I go home and talk shit. So for me, it's good to have the escape, because it's not always 110% football. I do have the work-life kind of balance, and I think I've got that pretty well sorted at the moment, where I can go to training or go to games and I can perform. And then after that, then I can enjoy seeing things or doing things in the country. So yeah, I think at the moment I've got the balance kind of sorted, and I'm in a good place to do it as well. Like you said, you spoke about the scenery and stuff. Like, I've driven around the country 3 or 4 times and I'll never get sick of it. Mm. So yeah, no, it's good.
And with the second job that you mentioned, so with the Division 2, or say the one above, taking out the top league for now, can players earn a decent amount of money to live off?
Yeah. Like last year I didn't have a job, and then we had a reduction in the financials that we could – the budget for the playing team. So this year I took a reduction in payment, and that was no stress for me. Because I'd had the job set up. But you can, yeah, it depends what you want to do, because Norway is an expensive country. But, you know, if you're smart with your money and your budget and you go and look at the right things, you're sorted, and you can definitely live off the football wages. But I think I'm lucky because of the football resume that I have, and knowing Casey, that helped me with the wage that I've got.
Yeah, okay. And accommodation, did you say they paid for your flights over? Do they cover your accommodation?
Yep. Yeah, so they sorted all that. Originally it was I paid for my flight and then I got reimbursed for it, just because I wanted to book when I wanted to go kind of thing. So otherwise Casey would have booked the flight and they would have paid for it straight away. And then accommodation, yeah. Just got over there and he put me in a couple of Airbnbs to start with, Casey did. And then with one of the other players, then we moved into like a apartment, I guess, together. And the football covered all of that. So, yeah
it was again, good. That's a huge help, isn't it, to have accommodation, not to worry about it.
Yeah, because you know you've got a place and, you know, like, hey, Case is a really good guy, so he's not going to put you in a crap place with no windows or anything like that, like, because he wants you to feel comfortable. So I think that was good for me as well, being able to live with, like, a teammate last year, because then we could just talk and, you know, the sun stayed up for so long, so we were going and playing golf at 7, 8 o'clock at night time in the summer. So that was good to just get away from everything and just go for a walk, play some golf and enjoy our time.
I was going to say, like, you'd have your daylight till like that sort of 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night there in summer, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think generally it was going down. You couldn't see anymore at like 11:45. So that was in summer, and then the sun was coming back up at 3 o'clock. But what really tripped me out this year was I came back last year for 6 weeks at the end of November, December, and then I went back to Norway 30th of December, and right smack bang in the middle of winter. And, you know, I was just chilling. We didn't have training for a week or two, and I was just going about my day, and then the sun went down. And I went, God, it's probably time for dinner. And so I made dinner, didn't look at the clock, and then I go, I'm getting a bit tired now. I probably should go to bed. It was only 4:30 in the afternoon. Like, the sun was coming up at 9:30 and going down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that was a tough one to wrap my head around, especially because then I found out that up north in summer it's 23 and a half hours of sunlight, and then in winter it's 30 minutes of sunlight. So I'm glad that I am where I am. But if anyone is thinking about playing football up north, just understand that in Norway that the sun's either always up or never up.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? That would be trippy.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely be tough. And I spoke to Harrison Sawyer, who's playing in Finland, and he's absolutely killing it. And he sent me a message at like 10 o'clock at night, and he goes, how do you deal with like the sun being up so long? And I said, Harry, you've just got to go find yourself a big set of blockout curtains and just put them up in your room, and then you won't have to worry about it anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know, because like that, it'd be tough to sleep. You just have to just get used to it, wouldn't you? And and make things happen that work for you.
You just have to do it. Otherwise, you're going to spiral. Yeah, and you're not going to sleep enough.
And one of the last thing I'll touch on, because I'm conscious of time and I know you got a lot on, you mentioned in your email about the personal number and how that took a bit of time to help you settle over there. Can you just explain a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, so I've got an Italian passport and citizenship, so that's why I can play football over there without needing visas or anything, because I've got the EU passport. And so for you to get paid, taxed, and to open a bank account and to have a plan on your phone and stuff, you need to have a personal number. So you have to go to like the taxation office and apply and show them all your papers, your contract and everything, and then they have to approve it. And they're kind of old school in the way that everything gets sent via mail, so it's nothing via email. So you have to wait for the mail to come to your, I guess, mailbox. But my problem was that I didn't have my name on the mailbox, so they didn't deliver it, and they didn't tell me about it. So it took probably three and a half months, and we just thought we were waiting for them to approve it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until, because I got there start of April, it probably wasn't until the end of July, early August that I got it. And then after that, then I had to go get a bank account. Then I had to get a tax card, and then I could get like a phone plan for my phone instead of having to pay $45 for 10 gigabytes of internet every time. Mm-hmm. So that took a bit of time, which was kind of annoying because they were just paying me into my Australian bank account, but they weren't taxing it because I didn't have a tax card. So then once I got the tax card, then they paid me, and then it was 2 months of pay, but at the end of it, it was like a third of a month, because then they taxed me all the tax that they hadn't done before. That was like the difficult side of things, because if you plan to stay on there stay in the country for 6 months or more, you have to get a personal number. But if you plan to stay for 6 months or less, then you can get a D number, which you get on the spot.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because you're there on, say, like a one-year contract initially, you need that. So, yeah, I was going to ask about that. So they would just pay you direct into your Aussie account first couple of months?
Yeah, for 3 months, I think it was. The first three payments went into my Australian account, which was no stress, but it was just that it wasn't taxed. But then they also have something over there, which it forgot to get mentioned to me, and that's no stress to me. But in June or July, one of the months, they have as like a holiday, because that's when a lot of people take 2 to 4 weeks off or whatever. And you don't get paid unless you've worked at that business or a previous business the year before. So they pay you like, I think it's like 11% or 12% of your previous annual earnings in that month to use for vacation money. So because I hadn't worked in Norway previously, in that month I got no money.
Oh,
and that's just something that happens in Norway. So even when I finish there, when I'm finished in Norway, the following June or July when I've left, then I'll get a 10 or 12% of the annual salary from the year before.
Right, okay.
So
that's good.
Yeah.
Good in your second year, not your first year.
Yeah, that was like the difficult thing, obviously, because, yeah, that wasn't really spoken about a lot. And, general knowledge for the rest of the people there. But if you don't know, then, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. These are the things that you want to sort of find out, isn't it? Because it's just little things you can help tick off as you go along.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if just say you had a contract for $3,000 a month and you haven't budgeted that the next month that you're not getting paid, then you go, oh, crap. Then you have to dig into your savings or what other money to survive for the month. So, yeah, I was okay because I hadn't, because you get paid monthly over there. So that's a thing about budgeting as well. Like, you're not getting paid weekly. It's the same with like your normal job, you get paid monthly. So, you've got to budget quite well. Otherwise, you can leave yourself in a bit of a hole.
Yeah. By week three, you're scrounging around.
Yeah. Yeah. You're trying to find noodles and it's, no good. But no, I've generally been okay with everything. So, yeah, I'd say like overall, that was a difficult scenario, just waiting for my personal number and stuff, because I couldn't really set myself up. But then once August, September hit, then I was set up and I had my bank account, I had my phone plan, and I had everything. So then I felt, that's everything sorted now, so I don't need to worry.
Yeah, just everything's settled. Again, like you spoke about at the beginning with the fiddly things, you had to sort of stop on this end. It's the same fiddly things on that end to have set up.
Then you got to pick it up. And it's the same. You can drive over there for 3 months on your Australian license. But then if you want to keep driving there, you have to go for your Norwegian license. But you have to do that within a year of when you took up residency there. So then you've just got to go and do the driving test. But if you fail that driving test, then you have to start from scratch. And starting from scratch is like $4,500 to $6,000 to get your license over there. So, yeah, that was a lot of pressure when I went for my driving test at the start of this year. And I only found that out because of my job. They wanted me to have a Norwegian driver's license. So, yeah, that I guess is something else that not a lot of people probably think about if you want to drive in the country.
Yeah, you wouldn't, would you? You'd imagine your Aussie license will just get you by to start with, but it's good to know.
Well, you drive on the opposite side of the car, opposite side of the road over there. So it took a little bit to get used to, but no, I'm proficient in that. And then when I went to drive the other day, when I got back from my trip, I was sometimes tripping out about where to turn and stuff like that because I was used to driving on the opposite side.
Yeah, on the left side of the car. Oh, yeah. How cool.
Yeah.
Mate, that's fantastic. I really appreciate your time. That's been awesome. Before I let you go, have you got any sort of, from any other, I guess, advice or tips that you'd like to pass on, given your experience over the past few years to anyone listening?
I think that we spoke about it a lot and it's the mentality side. Mm. And I think if, it's cliche, but if one door shuts, it's not over. There's always another door open. So if you can get yourself a really good network of people, really, like, don't be afraid. Go kind of all in with it all. So then you can experience the full culture, the full experience. And maybe football finishes there after a year, but you've gained a lot of life experience and you've met some people and they might have a connection somewhere or something like that. So I think that, like, that for me is really important. And, like, you know, you can't – that it's not advice, but I'm really lucky to have a supportive family. And, you know, they've sacrificed a lot for me. So it's me trying to repay the faith that they've shown in me. And it just gives you that extra bit of drive, I guess. So, yeah, that and probably if something doesn't seem right with what they're telling you or the move or something like that, then there's a fair chance it's probably not. So don't be scared to ask the questions, because if they really want you, they'll figure out a way to get you. So if something's not right, ask questions, try to find out who's been at the club before, see if you can talk to them. Because, yeah, you know, I've been selective in what I've done with my football and I think I've made some very good choices. But then you know that there's a lot of people out there that haven't probably made great choices and it's probably come back to bite them. So if something doesn't seem right, investigate it is probably like a big thing. And I think that you'd probably find that over your experience as well.
Yeah, that's it. Do the research and speak to the people that have actually been there. That's what I'm hoping, you know, over time, we've got a huge catalog of these interviews, is that someone can reach out. If someone does get a chance in Norway, they'll go, oh, well, Cameron's been there. I'll see if I can reach out to him. Or,
yeah, just send,
you know, someone
message.
In Finland, someone in Malaysia, someone in the Philippines, you know, wherever it may be, because there's so many good stories, but there's obviously some bad stories out there that people have had bad experiences and we want to try to avoid that.
There's always good and bad, but I think a lot of footballers, like, and especially the people you've had, whether it's or athletes in general and coaches, they'll be open to a message to talk about their experiences. And if you have a specific question, like I said before, it's as accessible as ever to get into contact with someone. And if it's not talking to any of us, it's even talking to you, because I'm sure that you've gained a lot of knowledge and experience from talking to the people from all over the world in different areas of sport and life. So I'm sure that, like, now that the network that you've created is such a powerful tool now for people, and I think that it's only going to get stronger with what you're doing, because now it's you're getting firsthand experiences about people, and maybe not everyone's going to have the same experience. Maybe someone's going to get benched the whole time that they're in the country, but if they've enjoyed their experience, they'll still be able to tell you about that or tell you about certain aspects of it.
Yeah, definitely. There's always something to pick up, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah, 100%.
But when you mentioned earlier about the network, I know you said being over there, you're surrounded by people, but what kind of social media, because I've spoke to a couple of people about this, do you use anything in particular for that football networking side of things that's been good or hasn't been good, or do you really bother about it?
For me, I'm just always open on Instagram, I guess. It's not hard to see that I'm a football player. And I guess it's for a lot of athletes, it's not hard to see that the profession that they're in with their Instagram or something, because that really is their, I guess, a profile that people can come and look and see photos and everything like that. So I guess that's probably where I get a lot of people talk to me, and I put up a lot of stuff about what I do, whether it's a story or a photo or something like that. But then it's just, you know, there's Y Scout and stuff like that, and WhatsApp where people can message people. So, you know, like we said earlier, it's not hard to send a message. And, like, don't be afraid, like, because you'd rather have peace of mind than, you know, kind of worrying. And like we said, it's a long way to fly over there, you know. And if you're worrying the 23 hours or 24 hours or whatever, then you get there and you're like, oh, crap. Then you get to the club and then you're like, oh, crap. And then you probably not be able to give your best performance. So if it takes 30 seconds out of your day to send a message to squash a query that you have, then just do it. It's I think it's very easy to do.
Yeah, just ask the question.
Yeah, it's there's no harm in asking the question, I guess.
No, that's it. And as you say, most people, I reckon 99% of people will be open to giving you an answer and like that, telling you about their experience. I'm getting people reach out to me on LinkedIn now, like, daily about this. because they want to know more, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, like we mentioned earlier, like this is the powerful tool that you've created. And like I said, people can talk to you, make a comment about their experience, comment about someone else's experience, you know, and like we spoke about how accessible it is now. So you're in a really good spot now if you're an athlete and you want to try overseas to give it a crack and send a message.
Mm. No. Fantastic, mate. I know you've been struggling through this. You said you're a little bit virusy after a long trip back and hear your throat going. So I'll let you go and drink some water. But I really appreciate your time, Cameron. Enjoy the wedding while you're back, and all the best when you head back to Norway.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I needed to get it done. And when I woke up this morning, I was in a world of hurt. But some Advil and Powerade kind of sorted me out for a bit. So, but it's been a pleasure to be able to talk about my story and just chat to you and chat to somebody that, you know, wants to know things and to help people. And like I said earlier, you're creating such an amazing platform for people. And I can only say hats off to you for giving it a crack. And I hope that it continues to grow and to do big things, because it's an amazing thing that you're doing. And you've given me some things to think about and things to talk about. And I'm sure people that are going to listen to it are probably going to, have a giggle at a few things and seriously think about a few other things. So just as everything that you do. So, once again, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate, your time as well.
No problem, mate. Thank you very much. Thank you for the kind words.
Thanks, mate.
Easy done. Awesome.
Yeah.